E1, number 17B.
Yeah, I think I also had that example of separation, I think, or purity. I said, can we say that spirit is its own infinite purity? And you said, no. There is only the onlyness. We can only say spirit is its own infinite onlyness or substance. Huh? Can you feel now why? Huh? Because these are already translated phenomena, translated to the human plane of thinking. Yes. All right. Do you feel we got this one? This word sense, huh? See, which really says, don't start with the human, huh? I remember very well that at the beginning of knowing our synonymous terms, see, that we would get the teaching which would say, well, everything starts with seeking. First you seek. And you can't seek without the second point, namely by separating. In your seeking you must separate between the good and the evil, the true and the wrong. And when you do that, something will somehow become definite in your thought. And you have a sense of definiteness, of spiritual understanding, of definiteness. You get the sense of spiritual power, like here. It meant that when you have spiritual power, you have to lay down your own will, which is love, laying down the mortal. So we had somehow, out of the subjective-objective, we had some ideas following each other. And in truth, we said, therefore, you must affirm what you know, and that gives you your unity with God. These were sequences right back in the 30s that one began to touch, not knowing at that time the structure of being. And so I remember that for a long time we were going along these days of creation sense, the building up of a consciousness from the point of view where it says, let there be light, where a light breaks in, where you have some measure of wisdom, some measure of seeking, and that you have to have it pure and separated from ignorance and separated from matter. You had a second day, and so you had a third day of spiritual understanding, of definiteness, of better clarification of things, a fourth day, that this would give you spiritual power, a fifth sense, that this demands laying down the mortal, that it demands enough love to give up one's own self and the mortal sense of things, and that would lead us to a kind of dominion or health, an affirmation of truth, which would result in a state of holiness or unity with God. Today, we do it differently. Today we see that we can structure the whole thing, and in structuring the whole thing you start from the first level of the hierarchy, namely from science itself, and ask, what does a synonymous term, what does reality know about itself? And deduce from there, from the level of science to the level of divine science, from there to the level of absolute Christian science, and from there to the level of Christian science. So that actually that diagram which we were once making, I think, yes, here it is, diagram 5. You know, we made that deduction, you remember? We made that deduction from being is its own infinite being, substituting the isness law for the operational law, as Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, then considering the law of absolute Christian Science by asking what is the relationship of the Word to its ideas of the Word, what is the relationship of Christ to the idea of Christ, What is the relationship in Christianity to the relationship of ideas of Christianity and then of science? So we have broadened here the basis quite a bit. And actually now we could take really the law of Christian Science. You could write here the law of Christian Science and show that each one of them is now dealing with its opposite. So that you have even more categories, always showing how each truth is the truth about an error. And that by resolving error, the human is being improved. So you have always at least the divine, the human, and the erroneous as three categories, at least. And so you feel how that whole pyramid comes right down to the question of error, of sickness, of sin, of matter, of mortal mind, of ignorance, of hate and jealousy and everything. Somewhere it touches every human problem. Every human problem. Yes. So this afternoon we will do the Christ and structure the Christ translation. So in the Christ order, we have again to ask first if we find the right question so as to structure the Christ order. Now, can you see that because it's a Christ order, we have to ask a different question than in the word order. Therefore, we can't just take those categories which we had in the word order and say they also apply to the Christ order. There we had the categories of subjective, objective cognition, subjective and objective realization, because only in that way can consciousness become at one with the divine, the objective sense. But here in the Christ has a completely different office to fulfill, namely, the Christ has the office to fulfill, to translate the divine principle to the point of idea in mind. So we can see, first of all, that the synonymous terms are really in a different order than in the word order, because they have a different office to fulfill. In the word order, their office was to present or state in an ordered way the nature of being. That was the word. And now in the Christ, we come to something different, namely not the definition of the nature of God, but how the divine principle translates itself to the point of manifestation as idea. So when we take the Christ order, we really have to have other categories. So we make here a diagram, and you make here four columns. The first one perhaps a bit small, because there we only have the synonymous terms and we know them, and then three equal ones. Like this. Now, in the first column, we again have the synonyms, how they are stated in the Christ order. And we know that therefore the range in which the synonyms are stated are between principle, and that's how it begins, principle. That must end with mind, and so we have principle, then life, then truth, then love, then soul, spirit, mind. That's the Christ order, as we have it on page 115. science and health. There, Mrs. Eddy does not speak about the question, what is God, which is the word, but about the question of the scientific translation, and so shows how the divine principle, which is life, truth, and love, translates itself through soul and ordering everything until it appears in mind as the manifestation of the idea. Okay, that we know from our study. So, if we have this office stated of the Christ, then we can really see that we will have to ask various questions relative to this Christ order. Namely, the question will be how that Christ order from a divine standpoint is operating. So the first order gives us the divine standpoint again. And we have first to see how the divine standpoint is translating itself. Don't you see something?
What is that word?
Synonym, sorry.
115.
Yeah, page 115, you have that order. Now, you can see that what we should ask now is, if we take the standpoint of the synonymous term itself and consider that order, then naturally we take the divine standpoint. That would be the second column, the divine standpoint. But we see that in Christian science we have to see the relationship between the divine and the human. So the next two columns will really be the human, how the Christ that really comes to the human and to an erroneous situation, to see what impact the Christ has on the human. Can you see that? That's the question of the Christ. What does it do to the human if we entertain the divine consciousness of that second column? We can ask, what does it do to the human? Now, the Christ is that which has an impact on the human. And so, actually, you can put that impact in two very different categories, that is, into two subcategories, which in life experience is most important, namely that you ask yourself, what is the impact of the divine on the human when we let it happen? When we let it happen. You see, when we don't resist it, when we accept it, which you know that it means when we don't resist it. But the Christ is that. Oh, I shouldn't go so quickly. But the Christ is that which says, I am going to make an impact on the human anyway. And anyhow, I never quite know when you say in English anyway and anyhow. But here I think it's both anyway and anyhow. So that it must also explain, or can explain another category, what happens to the human when we resist it, when we try to resist it. So I like to have a human category which we say, if we resist it, the last category would be the human situation when we resist the Christ. Can you see what the Christ message has to do? The Christ message has to translate the principle to the point of idea. That's what we have in the first column. And we will, in the second column, consider the various steps how that subjective point of view expresses itself subjectively, objectively. So it is a divine, subjective, objective standpoint. We really begin to see now the Christ at work from the divinely subjective standpoint, seeing at work what it does objectively in the divine. In the divine. We don't leave the divine. And then afterwards we can go over and say, but that consciousness will have an impact on the human. It doesn't leave the human at peace. It has an impact, and we can accept that impact willingly. And then we have the human standpoint, when we let it happen. Or we also should know the signs and the symptoms that arise when we resist it. Because that's usually the whole story of the Old Testament and of the prophets, that they show the workings of the Christ in the human, in Israel, when Israel resists it. That's why it is full of, I will come, destroy, and will lead you into captivity, and so on, and so on, and so on, because he is showing that Israel is resisting the Christ idea, and because they are resisting the Christ idea, they will see that the Christ idea will force them somewhat through suffering to accept the idea. So these are a few big categories which we should consider and keep in mind, because that is what happens in our life. Another point. Is the Christ something that happens after the world? Or is the Christ something that happens together with the world, simultaneously? Yes. Huh? Therefore, if we just look back to this word diagram which we had, we really can see that in this word diagram we had somewhere already a sort of translation taking place. Namely, we could see that when we take here the divine standpoint of mind manifesting itself as intelligence, that had a translating sense and translated itself to the phenomena of wisdom in the human. Between intelligence and wisdom and seeking, you have a great translation sense. Something translated itself. It is no more the same. And so actually, already here where I have made those two lines, is really within here, is the Christ going on all through here. So if you ask yourself, how does the Christ operate simultaneously with the Word? You have it right here. That the Christ translates the divine to the human. That's the office of the Christ. So that what we'll do, you see, is now to show and to investigate how this translation here from the divine to the human takes place. And consider the modus operandi of how that translation goes on, and what happens if we accept it, and what happens if we resist it. So we go back to our Christ order. And what we can see now is this, that the Christ here is shown as a terrific power. In order to translate, you need a transformer, a transforming power, an operative power. So you could easily see that this Christ order is really a operative power. See? It isn't just a statement, as we had in the Word. The Word is the statement, the presentation. Whereas in the Christ you have now this Word that has this terrific power to translate itself and to force everything to reform and to exchange and reform and adapt itself to the impact of the Word. The Christ makes an impact on the human by bringing the Word to the human. So, we can therefore consider once what the place values are when we consider the divinely subjective-objective standpoint, that second column. We just want to go now through that column and see what kind of power sense is implied by principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. So I put now everything under that power sense. You just take now the inward standpoint of divine subjective consciousness. You just feel now that you are one with principle and look out from principle, not only looking out from principle, but seeing the impact of principle. In its own realm, we are not going to leave the realm of the synonymous terms, and so we start right out from principle and see what kind of power do we have in principle. I think here you can see that principle is that potential power, which means that in principle, in the one principle, lies the whole potentiality of the power of transformation. The whole potentiality. You know what potentiality means? It is that latent power which is just there, ready to express itself. It isn't yet expressed, but potentially it's there. So that one feels that it is a terrific reservoir of power that is just ready, latently ready there to be used or to express itself. And in order that it is expressing itself, you just can see life as a life power. Life power is really the dynamic power. Can also call it the life power, or if you like, kinetic power, if that says anything to you. To the physicist, it means something very definite, namely that kinetic power is that potential power that comes into action and expresses itself. It's the expressing power, the dynamic power, the kinetic power, the life power. Can you hear? We have to stop here for a moment.